This is Radio Energy News.
Good afternoon, my name is Philip Wegmann and you are listening to the Edinburgh Napier News on Monday, the 13th of November. Coming up, Burnt Island Fabrications has been the focus of talks today as the Fife-based company is in danger of administration, which could affect 600 jobs.
So any avenues that could be explored to keep Bifab as a major employer within my constituency would be welcome.
Also in the news, Holyrood has unveiled new initiatives that will encourage pay equality in terms of minimum wage and gender. And later we take a look at the Carrying Stream Festival, which has been celebrating two late greats of the Scottish folk music community.
Macker, ye maun sing them. Cantos of exploit and dream, Dane of desire and fulfilment, balance of fire and red flambeau. Tomorrow, songs will flow free again and new voices be born on the carrying stream.
But first, Burnt Island Fabrications has been the focus of talks today as the Fife-based company is in danger of administration. The company, which owns plants in Burnt Island, Methil and Arnish, could affect 600 jobs if it files for administration. But the reasons for the administration are yet to be revealed. The Scottish Government, Unite and the GMB unions have been in talks with Bifab today to seek avenues to save the businesses. Aisling Press reports.
Burnt Island Fabrications is a manufacturing company producing large-scale equipment for the energy sector. Having started in oil and gas, Bifab diversified into the renewable energy sector, building parts for wind turbines. They won the contract to build jackets for turbines for the Beatrice Offshore Wind Farm in the Moray Firth. As Bifab faces a potential administration, how will this affect the local community? I spoke to David Torrance, SNP MSP for Kirkcaldy, to discuss this and a potential government bailout.
Listen, Bifab plays a vital role in the economy in my constituency. They are based in Burnt Island and in Methil, which are both in my constituency, and there's about 450 employees there full-time, which are high-skilled manufacturing jobs, which put a lot of money into the local economy. I've been in contact with the Scottish Government and I've been in contact with the Minister, Paul Wheelhouse. The Scottish Government, Scottish Enterprise, the unions and the company have been in conversation all weekend with Scottish Southern Energy and their partners to see if the issue could be resolved. So any avenues that could be explored to keep Bifab as a major employer within my constituency would be welcomed.
Are you able to shed any light kind of on making it any clear what the issue is? We're reading reports that it's, you know, cash flow problems. Is there any kind of more information on what that might be?
I think Bifab are waiting on payment from one of its contractors, and there's been a shortfall in cash, which has put the company under difficulties just now, and everybody's trying to work to resolve this issue.
Reasons for Bifab's potential administration have not yet been disclosed, but it is believed to involve payments between clients and contractors. Is Bifab's financial difficulty a reflection of Scotland's oil and gas industry? We spoke to John Scridgemore, Director of the Institute of Energy at Aberdeen University.
I'm no doubt that if the oil field was buoyant, Bifab wouldn't be going bust. But why? What the particular elements that made them go bust? Difficult to tell. They're in a competitive market, so that they, although they have quite a broad spread of offerings, you know, both topside, subsea, and wind farms for offshore, so that they're in quite they have quite a broad offering. It's all to do with new fields, and there's not enough new fields being developed just now, other than some very big ones for the kit. For most of the kit for that will have been built overseas, but they're more in the kind of smaller, you know, small medium sized stuff, and I guess the demand for that is down. And also they've positioned themselves for offshore wind, and offshore wind isn't going ahead that fast for various reasons, not least of which is double the cost of onshore wind. Approximately, they've just kind of had a little bit of a downturn in the oil field, offshore wind not going well, and perhaps there are other structural elements to their business that they just can't keep going.
The Scottish Government has revealed new initiatives that will encourage pay equality related to both minimum wage and gender disparity. Measures include a regionally focused accreditation scheme for employees to create the UK's first living wage towns, cities and regions. Equal pay between men and women is also on the agenda. Our reporter Charlotte Hume has been investigating.
Holyrood has unveiled plans to transform Scotland into a living wage nation. The minimum wage is £7.50 per hour for over 25s, but the Scottish Government backs the real living wage of £8.75. This, however, remains a voluntary rate. So with this responsibility resting solely on business owners to make this happen, will they actually do it? We asked local employers around Morningside their thoughts on how much they pay their workers, including the owner of Delicatessen 181.
People who come and work here, we respect them.
We pay a living wage because we believe that's what people are worth. And if the more you pay, the better response you get from your staff, the better treatment they feel, and the longer they stay with you. At the end of the day, your morale becomes really low if you're not being paid what you feel you're worth. And also to find good people is hard. So if you pay a decent wage, you attract people who are serious about the business. If you treat people well, you get treated well in return. We could employ someone for less, and we could be saving money on our wages, but we don't want to.
A barista in a well-known high street coffee chain, however, confirmed that he was paid minimum wage and described himself as a cog in the machine. Peter Kelly, director of Poverty Alliance, which is working on the accreditation scheme, said that while there remains work to be done, he is hopeful.
I think for larger employers, there might be whole systems that need changed. We know that employers are going to say that we're squeezed in terms of rising costs. Last week, we reached a big target. We reached 1,000 living wage employers in Scotland. And we reckon that more than 25,000 workers in Scotland have benefited. And I think we will see more, despite, you know, uncertain economic times. I think we will see more in the future.
This is not the only area in which pay is being disputed.
For every dollar a man makes, a woman makes 63 cents. Now, 50 years ago, that was 62 cents. So, with that kind of luck, it'll be the year 3,888 before we make a buck.
Laurie Anderson sang it in 1989, and 28 years later, it seems her judgment was an eerie foreshadowing of events. From today, women stop earning relative to men because of the gender pay gap. So women effectively work for free for 51 days a year, earning on average 14.1% less than men. The World Economic Forum have said women will wait 217 years for the pay gap to close, from research that ranks 144 countries on the gap between women and men. Iceland have come out as the best place to live for gender pay equality.
This is the ninth year that Iceland is at the very top of the Global Gender Gap Index. It's likely to be the first country in the world that will have closed nearly 90% of its gender gap, although it's not there yet.
The UK has risen 5 places since last year to 15th on the index, with Blaenau Gwent, a county borough in Wales, as the area with the highest gender pay gap in the UK. In Blaenau Gwent, the average man makes £14.07 an hour, compared to women at £9.54, and this represents a 32% difference in pay. Charity Chwa Teg in Wales deals with how to ensure fair treatment for female workers in Wales. Natasha Davies, policy and research lead, had this to say.
Blaenau Gwent's quite an unusual one because there's quite a big gap between the full-time average earnings of both men and women. But that's got a lot to do with the fact that the kind of jobs available in that area, a lot of them tend to be quite traditional manufacturing type job, which pay a little bit better. And obviously there's a particular issue with the kind of jobs that women are doing in that area, and the fact that they're associated with a lower rate of pay.
16:38, here are today's international news headlines. At least 396 people have died in an earthquake which hit the border region between Iran and Iraq. 7,000 people are said to have been injured in the quake. One aid agency said 70,000 people will need shelter. The first CO2 rise in 4 years is putting pressure on Paris targets. The reason for the expected increase is the larger use of coal in China as the economy expands. Scientists warn that a global CO2 peak must be reached before 2020 to limit dangerous global warming this century. The musician and founder of Band 8, Bob Geldof, is planning to return his Freedom of the City of Dublin award in protest against Myanmar leader Aung San Suu Kyi, who also holds the award. The Myanmar leader has faced criticism over a failure to address accusations of ethnic cleansing against Myanmar Rohingya Muslims. The Scottish Government have set a target of 20% of the student population to be from more deprived backgrounds by 2030. The initiative came from an organization called Universities of Scotland, who say the policy is designed to encourage children from underprivileged backgrounds to consider university as a more achievable option. Despite all Scottish universities taking part, support for the initiative has not been widespread. Retired teacher Liz Towns fears the scheme could prove problematic.
As an ex-teacher, I'm very concerned about falling academic standards. I know these students have a hard time, possibly at home, and it makes it difficult for them to concentrate at school. But I don't think this is the way forward, mainly because if they're not coping at school and, you know, reaching the standard, how are they going to cope when they get to university?
Irvin Allen, a lecturer at the Queen Margaret University, holds a different view.
I think it's a great idea to allow participation into universities, particularly from students from disadvantaged backgrounds, you know.
The report includes policies that encourage universities to focus on potential and experience rather than just academic success. James McNaney is a lecturer and journalist who focuses on the Scottish education policy. Although a supporter of the initiative, he raises some concerns that he feels the Parliament hasn't taken into account.
There are still some questions to be answered, one of which for me would be around the data being used to determine whether or not somebody, you know, qualifies or somebody is regarded as coming from a deprived background. The issue there is if the data used is the SIMD data, then that is in fact a measure of an area and not of individuals. And there is a risk, which already exists just now, of young people from deprived backgrounds but who live in relatively affluent areas being missed.
James McNaney was speaking. The policy is due to implement it for courses beginning in 2020. We've all read the advice on trains' toilet walls: don't flush the toilet whilst the train is stationary at the platform. But by January 2018, that situation will come to an end, and all ScotRail trains, at least, will stop discharging raw sewage straight onto the line. Earlier today, we went to Waverley and asked the passengers what they made of the practice.
I mean, it's an old-fashioned idea that you just discharge, and it's like putting things into the sea.
Oh yeah, it's probably not great. No, sounds a bit gross. I didn't realise that. I didn't realise that waste goes out the bottom of a train afterwards.
When you do think about it, it is pretty disgusting.
Well, ScotRail are now completing the fitting of controlled emission tanks to the bottom of all its trains, which will be emptied at the depots, and the discharge of sewage onto the lines and undercarriage trains will end. The Railway Workers Union, the RMT, is claiming a significant victory for its members in the move. Earlier we spoke to Gordon Martin, regional organiser for the RMT in Scotland, about what this means for his members.
Yeah, well, it's a 21st century infrastructure. The ScotRail Alliance are continually proclaiming the fact, and it is a fact, that they're putting in a lot of money to modernise Scotland's railway. So what we're saying is, we're a modern railway, we want modern waste disposal methods, and these controlled emission tanks provide that. So we are very happy that it's now going to be in place, but you're right. If buses were running up and down Hope Street, depositing sewage straight onto the road, there had been a huge kick-up. So the fact that it's been happening in the railway with impunity for decades is simply not good enough.
ScotRail spoke to us earlier today and said the discharge has been unpleasant for staff from health and safety point of views, and this is great news as we have managed to make this change before any other railway company in the UK. Believe it or not, Scotland, the home of whisky, could become the first country in the world to set a minimum pricing for alcohol. On Wednesday, the Supreme Court will decide on the bill that would see a minimum price of 50 pence per unit of alcohol. Campaigners Alcohol Focus Scotland said that a minimum unit price could prevent an estimated 60 alcohol-related deaths, 1,600 hospital admissions and 3,500 crimes. But the Scotch Whisky Association claim it's a misguided policy that would be ineffective and an illegal barrier to trade. Charles Galloway, the manager of a family-run pub chain, believes that raising the price of alcohol would encourage responsible drinking and will actually benefit local pubs and bars.
Also, it would have less or minimum impact on our sales because, broadly speaking, our pricing with regards to drink is equal to or greater than minimum unit pricing. If you take, for example, a cheap bottle of vodka, which you can buy in the supermarket for, say, around about £9. And that has probably around about 60 units. If you were paying 50 pence per unit, which is what the Scottish Government are suggesting, it's 50p per unit, that bottle of vodka would cost someplace in the region of between £20 and £30.
We asked people in the capital what they thought of a minimum price on alcohol.
I think there's a health aspect of alcohol as well, so if ultimately the government feels that's the right way of raising taxes, then there's a place for that.
I think it's a bad idea, to be honest. I mean, we're from London, where it costs about 20 quid a pint anyway, so...
We need to change the culture. And you can go to the supermarket and buy, especially with Christmas coming up, 3 cases of beer for 20 quid. It evens out the playing field because supermarkets can take a loss leader, you know, and small businesses can't compete with that, you know what I mean? So, it may make sense, but I'm maybe the minority. Well, we'll see
what comes. A minimum price on alcohol in Scotland, the Supreme Court will decide on Wednesday. Over the past few days, members of the Scottish folk music community descended on Edinburgh for the Carrying Stream Festival, a festival founded as a celebration of the life and legacy of the Scottish folklorist, Scottish folklorist, poet, writer and political activist Hamish Henderson. But as our reporter Carolyn Scott has been finding out, this year's festival also saw tributes being paid to another great of the Scottish folk community.
They have sentenced a man or a fornia.
The sounds of Edinburgh's Pleasance Cabaret Bar, home to the Edinburgh Folk Club, but for the past few days, home also to the 16th annual Carrying Stream Festival. Celebrating the life of the man widely regarded as the father of the Scottish folk revival, Hamish Henderson, this year's festival paid tribute to another great of the Scottish folk community, one of the festival's founders, Eberhard Bort, better known by all as Paddy. Paddy Bort ran the Edinburgh Folk Club and, of course, the Wee Folk Club.
Well, every Sunday night at the Oak, we've got the Wee Folk Club at 8:30, an intimate venue, 30 seats, acoustic. It's a great night out. We've got some fantastic musicians and singers. Every Sunday night, do come along.
But Paddy was also an academic who compiled numerous books on the work of Henderson and the importance of his writing in terms of the constitutional situation in Scotland and in Europe. Paddy Bort passed away earlier this year, leaving a hole in the heart of the Edinburgh and national folk music community. His influence so grand that his death was marked with a motion of remembrance in the Scottish Parliament and a tribute from the First Minister Nicola Sturgeon. But the Carrying Stream flows still, and this weekend tributes were paid to both Hamish and Paddy. I spoke to Steve Byrne, performer and folklorist, and asked him how important Paddy's role had been in promoting Hamish Henderson's work and what this loss meant for the folk scene.
I think the festival this year was just very difficult in terms of organisation, because Paddy was somebody, as many of us who knew him realised, was somebody that didn't stop, and you know, he would go to his office late of an evening and be emailing and organising things till the wee small hours. So I think in that sense, there's been a bit of a pulling together of the resources of the folk club, certainly, and people like myself stepping in to help at the lecture this year. And I think Paddy's role in promoting Hamish's work is absolutely massive in terms of keeping the Carrying Stream alive.
Henderson's most famous work, the song Freedom Come All Ye, is considered by many to be the alternative Scottish national anthem. It speaks of anti-imperialism and the anticipation of the day when all peoples are truly free and can meet in peace and friendship. Amid the concerts and open singing sessions over the past few days, the yearly memorial lecture paid homage to Henderson as the European intellectual and scholar. This year, delivered by Donald Smith, Director of the Traditional Arts and Culture Scotland and founder of the Scottish Storytelling Centre, it was entitled Scotland in Europe, Europe in Scotland. Smith spoke biographically of Henderson, of how he favoured anonymity over personal definition as a conduit for the culture and music of Scotland, and he illustrated this by quoting from the elegy that Henderson wrote for himself, Under the Earth I Go, the poem from which the festival took its name, which tells that the Carrying Stream will continue forevermore with new voices flowing.
Macker, ye maun sing them, cantos of exploit and dream, Dane of desire and fulfilment, balance of fire and red flambeau. Tomorrow, songs will flow free again, and new voices be born on the Carrying Stream.
And we have some breaking news just coming in. The Brexit minister, David Davis, has announced in the last 15 minutes that the UK Parliament will be given the opportunity to vote on the final Brexit deal negotiated by the UK government and the European Union before Britain leaves the EU.
Now, the weather on Radio Energy.
The weather in Edinburgh this evening will be cloudy and will be for most of the night. Some drizzle will work its way from the west, but will dry us up as the night goes on. We'll be expecting a minimum temperature of 4 degrees, so remember to wrap up warm, and tomorrow is set to be a sunnier day with a maximum temperature of 10 degrees. That was the Edinburgh Napier News. I'm Philip Wickman. Thank you for listening and see you next time.
Edinburgh Napier Radio Group. Radio Energy. By the students. For the students.